Vaidaber Adonai El Moshe Lemor Daber El Kol Adas B'nei Yisrael V'yamarta Alehem Kedoshim Tihyu Kihi Kadosh Ani Adonai Eloheichem. Hashem spoke to Moshe, saying, "Speak to the entire assembly of the children of Israel, and say to them, 'You shall be holy, for holy am I, Hashem, your God.'" No introduction this time, no music, no lead-in. Today is Yom HaShoah V'Hagvura, Holocaust Memorial Day here in Israel, and hopefully in Jewish communities all over the world as well. And besides the fact that it's during Sfirat HaOmer, where I would have some kind of introductory theme, I felt that on Yom HaShoah would be totally inappropriate. So I will say shalom and welcome to another issue of Torah Tidbits Audio. I'll tell you that I'm your host, Phil Chernofsky, and this show is for Parshat Kedoshim, but also for Yom HaShoah. And that recording and first broadcast is the Thursday, Yom Chamishi, the 27th day of Nisan, 5776, corresponding to May 5th, 5. Even though it is Yom HaShoah, we're still in the month of Nisan, which, by the way, is a point of contention in certain levels, in certain circles. But we will continue with our practice of saying Tehillim Kuf Kaf Aleph, Psalm 121, when we don't say Tachanun. Shir Lama Alot, Esa Einai El Heharim, Me'ayin Yavo Ezri. Ezri Me'im Adonai, Osei Shamayim Va'aretz. Al Yitain Lamot Raglecha, Al Yanum Shomerecha. Hine Lo Yanum V'lo Yishan Shomer Yisrael. Adonai Shomerecha, Adonai Tzilecha, Al Yad Yeminecha. Yomam Hashemesh lo yakeka v'yoreach balayla. Adonai yishmorcha mikol ra, yishmor et nafshecha. Adonai yishmor tzeitecha uvoecha me'ata v'yad olam. Achenu kol beit Yisrael, hanetunim batzara uvashivya, ha'omedim mebein bayam uvein bayabasha, ha'makom yirachem aleihem v'yotziyem mitzara lirvacha u'me'afela l'ora u'mishibud l'gu'ula. Hashta ba'agala uvizman kariv v'nomar amen. Okay, I have no guarantee that you're going to listen to this on Yom HaShoah, and it might be a little out of place to listen to it at a different time. But I will try to combine a few different things. Let me start with the fact that at the Seder, we use an expression, Bechol Dor Vodor, in every generation. Now, it turns out that there are two uses of that term in every generation. They're very different, but I'd like to bring them together. The second one is something that we say towards the end of the Magid portion of the Haggadah, of the Seder, where we say, in every generation, Chayav Adam Lirot et Atzmo Ki'ilu Hu Yatza Mimitzrayim. A person is obligated to show as if he himself came out of Egypt. The basic idea there is to internalize and personalize and update the once upon a time, a long time ago, kind of stories of Jewish history into something that we can relate to as more than a story. It's easy to say 3,300 and something years ago, our ancestors were enslaved in Egypt, and tell the story of Yaakov coming down there, and the story before of Yosef and his brothers, and the prophecy to Avraham of being strangers in a strange land, and all of that. And it's very remote. 3,300 years ago is not only a long time ago, it is an it is a period of time that our minds cannot wrap around. We can say this happened 5 years ago, something happened 10 years ago, 50 years ago, within the last 100 years, and there's a way that we could understand that, but not 3,300 and some odd years. Very difficult. What we need to do is to say it doesn't matter when this happened in Jewish history. I, as a Jew, we, as Jews, are part of the entire Jewish history, and therefore we speak, and this is something we're directed to at the Seder table, to speak in first person and say, we were slaves to Paro in Egypt, and God took us out, and we called out to him, and he did this for us. It's not just semantics, it's a very, very important concept in Judaism that things should be refreshed as if they are happening to you yourself. It gives the experience of the Exodus, in this particular example, a much more real and personal feel, so that we plug ourselves into the picture of the Jewish people in a more significant way. Now, let's skip 7 weeks ahead of that night, the night that the Seder night commemorates, to actually 6 weeks, to our arrival at the Sinai wilderness. The Torah says, Bachodesh Hashalishi, in the third month, Letzeit B'nai Yisrael Me'eretz Mitzrayim, the third month of the Exodus, from the Exodus. We came out in Nisan, then there's Iyar, and now it's Sivan. Bayom Hazeh Ba'u Midbar Sinai. On this day, they arrived at Sinai. So Rashi asks the obvious. Bayom Hazeh, on this day? What about Bayom Hahu, on that day? Because that's how you tell a story. What does Bayom Hazeh come to teach us? Aside from the fact that it was Rosh Chodesh, the first day of the month of Sivan, it teaches us that every day the experience of revelation at Sinai and the giving and the receiving of the Torah should be fresh in our eyes as if we received it today. So now we're talking about the Exodus, and we're talking about Matan Torah, the receiving of the Torah. It's not a big jump to apply this idea to the intervening days, which we call the period of Sefirat HaOmer, the counting of the Omer. Because, just to get a little bit into that, the way the Torah presents the counting of the Omer in not this week's Seder, but next week's Seder, and 2 weeks for Chutz La'aretz people. We'll get to there in a moment also, if we can. The Torah says that you start counting from the day after the first day of Yom Tov, the first festival day of Pesach, from the day that we bring the barley offering in the Beit HaMikdash, in the temple, 7 full weeks, until the 50th day, which means until, but not including, Ad V'lo Ad Bechlal, exclusive, until the 50th day, when we bring a Mincha Chadasha Lashem, a new meal offering to God, which is known as the Shtei HaLechem, the two loaves. So most authorities see this as a package deal. In the time of the Beit HaMikdash, the Torah commands the bringing of the barley offering, the counting from that day until, but not including, the 50th day, when the bringing of the two loaves was done. And in the absence of a temple, and in the absence of the barley offering, and in the absence of the Shtei HaLechem, the two loaves, then the counting is, at best, hollow, and according to most opinions, is not Torah law unless you have the full package. So why do we do it? By rabbinic law. The rabbi said, we want you to not forget the concept. We want you to anticipate the coming of the messianic era when the Beit HaMikdash will be rebuilt. And therefore, we keep in shape Zecher LeMikdash, commemorative of the temple, by counting. The Rambam is one of the few voices who says that the counting of the Omer in our time is still a Torah law, and part of it is based on the idea that in that very, very first year of the Exodus, the people were told, or let's put it like this, God said to Moshe at the burning bush, proof that I am sending you into Egypt to take the people out is that you will serve me on your way out on this very spot. Our tradition says that that spot was Mount Sinai, where Moshe had the vision of the burning bush. Furthermore, the word, and you shall serve me, is ta'avdun, instead of just ta'avdu. There's a final nun, which is superfluous grammatically, and nun is numerically 50, considered to be a remez, a hint, to the number of days following the Exodus that we would be receiving the Torah. So according to this school of thought, the people began counting with eager anticipation to the 50th day, and therefore the essence of the counting between the day following the Exodus and the time of receiving the Torah, in essence, was not dependent upon the bringing of the barley offering, which didn't happen until we came into Israel, and the bringing of the two loaves on Shavuot, which didn't happen until we came into Israel. One way or the other, we're talking about personalizing and internalizing in the way that we transmit this to the next generation, in the way we behave towards these dates. Now, it's not a big jump from here to say what applies to the night of the Exodus, that you have to see it as if you yourself came out of Egypt, and to the build-up to the receiving of the Torah, and to the Sinai experience, and apply this to all of Jewish history. It is you, who are part of this, not they. The people who say they about the Jews are the non-Jews. A Jew should always include himself in the form of we, us, I, me, etc. Now we get to the other Bechol Dor Vodor, which is earlier in the Haggadah, in that which has been made a very popular song by Yaakov Shveki and others, but it was always sung at the Seder table. In fact, it is one of those points in the Haggadah when we cover the matzah and lift up our cup of wine, and we proudly sing V'hi she'amda l'avoteinu v'lanu, referring to a promise that God has made, which he has stood by. V'hi she'amda l'avoteinu v'lanu, shelo echad bilvad amad aleinu l'chaloteinu. It is not just one Pharaoh who has stood up to vanquish us. Ela she'bechol dor v'dor, rather, in every generation, Om dimaleinu l'chaloteinu, people stand up against us. They have different names. They have different styles. They have different percentages of success or failure. But it is a fact of Jewish history that people stand up against us to vanquish us. V'HaKadosh Baruch Hu Matzilenu Mi'adam, and God saves us from their hand. And we are happy with that, and we raise our cup of wine, thereby having to cover the matzah. And then we put it down, the wine down, and we uncover the matzah, and we continue with the Haggadah. The point is that we have to, also in that context of Shebechol Dor V'Dor, personalize it and see it as if we ourselves are going through it or went through it. Now, if it's hard to relate to Yetziat Mitzrayim, the Exodus of 3,300 plus years ago, it is equally hard, if not harder, to relate to Shibud Mitzrayim, the enslavement in Egypt. And you can read the details and read the Midrashim, but it's very, very hard for us to put ourselves in that position in our minds, even though that's what we're supposed to do. Now, we finish Pesach on the 21st of Nisan here in Israel, on the 22nd of Nisan all over the world. And this year it hardly made a difference because it was Shabbat that was the last day. And then, as soon as you finish, what stares you in the face here in Israel is Yom HaShoah 5 days later. That's not a lot of time. And that Yom HaShoah, the Holocaust Day, is something that takes an event that certainly is part of Shebechol Dor V'Dor Omdim Aleinu L'Chaloteinu. You have no greater example and no more recent example than Hitler Yimach Shemo, who stood up against the Jewish people with a final solution to rid Europe of all of its Jews. And because it is relatively recent, we have less of a problem of putting ourselves into that situation, of personalizing it, and of internalizing it. The fact of the matter is, there are still many survivors of the Holocaust that, to this very day, tell their story in words or in books or in films, and children of Holocaust survivors who tell us of what their father, mother, or both told them when they were younger, and it perpetuates through the education about the Holocaust, which is not restricted just to Yom HaShoah. It's an ongoing theme in Jewish education. But I want to look at it now, not just from the experience of the Holocaust, but from the perspective of both Bechol Dor V'Dor in every generation. Number one, I'm not qualitatively comparing it or contrasting it to the enslavement in Egypt, but there or to any other period of Jewish history. But certainly on an analogy level, we can relate to it, personalize it, because the stories are what people we know went through, and people we know who know people who went through, and the stories are alive and fresh. And that's a challenge of Jewish education throughout Jewish history. So we have that aspect also. And you know, I'm not comparing qualitatively the two experiences or anything in between, or the fear of the Jews of the Persian kingdom when Haman came around, or the Chmelnicki thing, or any other, the Crusades, or any other episodes in history. But it gives us a certain way to relate to it, that which is difficult to do by itself. Now, let me just give one example of what's running through my mind. There's a book that I have used over the years on Yom HaShoah called Responsa from the Holocaust by Rabbi Ephraim Oshri, Zichrono Livracha, one who was a Rav, a young Rav in the Kovno ghetto in Lithuania, and survived the war, died not that long ago, in his early 90s, I believe, and wrote a large work of responsa from that period, some of which was translated into English and put into a volume of responsa from the Holocaust. Now, several of those questions always come to my mind and always bring a tear to my eye and strong feelings in my heart. But the one that I want to touch on now was an experience that he shared. There was a secret minion in hiding in the ghetto. And one morning, the Baal Tefillah, the Chazan, the one who was leading the prayers, right at the beginning, when he started Birchot HaShachar, was able to say, "Blessed are you, God, our God, King of the universe, who gave the instinct into certain animals, the donkey, let's say, to distinguish between night and day." And then the next one, Shelo Asani Goy, thank God that you, or blessing God for not having made you a non-Jew. And then he came to the third blessing, which is Shelo Asani Aved, that he did not make me a slave. And he broke down, and he could not continue the prayer. He started to cry. And he turned to the rabbi in agony and said, "How can I possibly say, blessed are you, God, our God, King of the universe, who has not made me a slave, when that's what we are? We are slave laborers in a situation where we don't know what tomorrow will bring." So the Rav Oshri's answer to him was that there is physical enslavement, which they definitely were subjected to, and then there is spiritual or psychological enslavement, which by the very fact that they were continuing to daven and that they had this secret minion at great personal risk to each one who came, and to the others in the ghetto as well probably, that showed that they were not subjected to psychological and spiritual enslavement. And that's what the blessing should mean, Shelo Asani Aved. Now, that, to me, is a very real thing, a question that always comes up in my mind, and it's something that I don't think anybody can possibly answer. Hold that thought. I'll be right back with more Torah Tidbits Audio for Yom HaShoah and for Parshat Kedoshim. You are listening to Torah Tidbits Audio for Parshat Kedoshim on Yom HaShoah, or thereabouts. Let me just pick up from where I left off. Let me actually backtrack a little. When the young state of Israel, way back when, was deciding on how to memorialize, commemorate the Shoah, there was a school of thought that felt that it should be added to a modified Tisha B'Av, and in certain respects it is. The keynote books that have been printed recently have keynote not only in the traditional form that the books have had over the years, but they include keynote for the Holocaust. There's an aspect of Asara B'Tevet that is used to commemorate, that's called Yom Kaddish Klali. The date that was chosen to be the national Yom HaShoah V'Hagvura was the date of the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising, and it's the 27th of Nisan. I would say for that reason, the rabbinate has never suggested that people fast on Yom HaShoah, because you're not allowed to fast during the month of Nisan, with the exception of firstborns on Erev Pesach. But they felt that it was a significant date to commemorate the Shoah, remember, I keep using the term, not just Yom HaShoah, Holocaust Day, but Yom HaShoah V'Hagvura, Holocaust and mighty, I don't even know good English words, strength. Getting back again to the young state of Israel, felt that the establishment of the state in the ashes of the Holocaust was a significant, I don't know what you want to call it, segue to the point where they needed to focus on an aspect of the Shoah that would naturally dovetail into the events that brought about Hakamat HaMedina, the establishment of the state. What do I mean by that? There's a perception of victims of the Shoah as lambs going to their slaughter. The Warsaw Ghetto Uprising, not unique, but definitely symbolic or epitomized the resistance and the taking a stand, even if it was unsuccessful, to fight against the Nazis. And the early founders of the state felt, I would suggest, more comfortable with attaching or focusing on that aspect of the Shoah when we're talking about a national commemoration in the state of Israel. I hope I'm getting my point across. I have felt over the many years, especially since I got that book on the Responsive from the Holocaust, that the armed uprising in the Warsaw Ghetto is one form of a display of Givura, but many, many other things also display Givura, which we should not be embarrassed about, we should be proud of. I've used the example before from another responsa in the book, responsum in the book, a group of laborers came to the Rav and told him the following, that they had been working in a Nazi work camp outside the ghetto and had been sneaking away planks of wood so that they would be able to build a sukkah. And they actually built a sukkah in an unused alleyway made up of these boards, and they realized that there is a halachic problem about performing a mitzvah when stealing of the elements of the mitzvah were involved. So they wanted to know if they were allowed to use such a sukkah for the mitzvah to make a bracha, etc. The astonishing thing, and to me the sign of Gevura, was that the Rav did not say to them, "What are you guys, out of your mind? You're building a sukkah. If you're found out, you'll be summarily executed. Sukkah is not one of those mitzvot which require a person to give up his life for. It is not Yehoreg V'al Ya'avor. You are totally exempt under our circumstances here in the ghetto from the mitzvah of sukkah. So why would you think of doing it?" He didn't say that to them. He explained to them that when the Nazis came to Lithuania, they took over existing lumber yards, many of which were owned by Jews. Under the circumstances, a Jewish owner would have total yiyush, giving up hope of ever getting his business back. And therefore, these boards are not halachically to be considered stolen from anybody, and the sukkah would be kosher. I had a shiver when I read that tshuva, because it is an unbelievable display of a spiritual bravery and valor which should make every Jew proud. Would I have been able to do those things? I have no way of knowing. I hope that I would, but you really, really can't tell. Not under those circumstances. It was an amazing display, and the book is filled with other questions, many of which point to that courage and valor. I'm still fishing for the right English words, but I think I'm touching on some of them, to explain Gevurah. The image of 6 million victims of the Shoah going to their slaughter in a sheepish way is just a distortion of what happened in the Shoah. There was courage displayed every day in many, many different ways, and even the founding fathers and their children of the new state of Israel needn't have been embarrassed by "we're not like them because we picked up guns and we fought against the British and we fought against the Arabs and we helped establish the state." Yes, but there was heroism and valor and courage in the Shoah as well. And the fact that this follows Pesach so soon, and then 1 week later is, even less than a week later, is Yom HaZikaron, and then immediately Yom HaAtzmaut, is an amazing collection of dates. No accident, they are exactly where they belong in order to bring out this lesson for us. It is something to be able to plug ourselves in to the entire picture of Jewish history that cannot be done successfully, as I mentioned much earlier, in a scenario that happened only 3,300 years ago. It can be done when we think of this relatively modern experience. I don't know if I'm overdoing that or understating it, but that's what I wanted to share on the Behold Dor Vodor. The stories out of the Holocaust continue. There hasn't been a time where we can say, been there, did it. 10 o'clock this morning, when the siren went on for 2 full minutes, was a pause to stand and to ponder and reflect a myriad of things. Personally, my mind goes to my mother-in-law, Aleha HaShalom, who was a survivor, who lived twice as long, she once told me, as the Nazis wanted her to live. They tried to kill her at a certain age, and she doubled it and more. And she took that as a, you know, says every day that I live is a victory over the Nazis that didn't want me to live, that didn't want me to have children, that didn't want me to have grandchildren. And Baruch Hashem, now we're talking about great-grandchildren, which she never got to see, but they are to her credit as well. So my thought goes to her, and goes to other people that I know of, and people whose namesakes were lost in the Shoah, and families this, and just heard an interesting anecdote. I don't know if you'll hear it with the same glint of humor in the person's eye that it was meant to be. But I was talking to somebody whose grandfather had survived Nazi Europe and made his way in the early 60s to Australia, where someone noticed a number tattooed to his arm and said, "Hey, what are those numbers there?" Someone who was totally oblivious to what had happened and the significance of the number. And he, with a twinkle in his eye and a touch of humor, said, "That's my girlfriend's telephone number. I want to make sure I don't forget it." Now, maybe that's a sign of gevura also. You can never know how you would react in a similar situation. We must look at the victims and the survivors as holy people, and that fits right into Kedoshim Tihiyu, this week's Sedra, which I do want to talk about now for a while. And that's my story. Okay, Emir Sahashem. First of all, I really should apologize. I really meant to do a show before Pesach, and things got just so busy that it went by the wayside. And on Chol HaMoed, I didn't even have a chance. So, you know, I'm sorry that I missed that. And here's this. Next week, Emir Sahashem, I will try to record on Wednesday Yom HaZikaron for Yom HaZikaron and Yom HaAtzma'ut, and then the week after we'll get back to sort of normal. Okay, Parshat Kedoshim, let me explain something also. When Pesach runs from Shabbat to Friday here in Israel, it's from Shabbat to Shabbat outside of Israel. The significance of that is that outside of Israel, the eighth day of Pesach is already back to normal for us here in Israel. Not quite normal this year because it was Shabbat and we weren't able to Pesach dishes and take out chametz dishes and no chametz. But other than that, we went back to the weekly portion, which was Acharei Mot. In Chutz La'aretz, they weren't able to do that because of their eighth day of Pesach, which means this Shabbat they read all over the world, except in Israel, Parshat Acharei, and we in Israel read Kedoshim. So I really should talk a little bit about both, but I want to focus on Kedoshim, because Kedoshim is the term that we use for Jews who have lost their lives because they were Jewish. And it's something that should not be underplayed or underscored. It's a very important idea. So I want to talk about Kedoshim. Kedoshim is a relatively short Sedra. By the way, we will be out of sync in weekly Torah reading. Excuse me, from last Shabbat for a period of 16 weeks. Until Matot Maseh, which is read combined outside of Israel, and we separate here in Israel, so that Parshat Devarim, the Shabbat right before Tisha B'Av, will be back in sync. And don't know if we want to get into all of that, but actually I will say the following. In a 12-month year, there are a couple of double sedras. We in Israel will split in a regular year when this happens. We split Bahar and Bechukotai, and we're out of sync only for a handful of weeks. When Shavuot here is Friday, it's Friday Shabbat outside of Israel. Then outside of Israel combines Chukat and Bullock, and we split them. So we get back into sync relatively soon. The situation of this year, with a 13-month year, two Adars, is that there are no double Sedras for us to split until Matot Maseh, and therefore it takes 16 weeks till we get back into sync. Many people have asked me, how come outside of Israel they don't combine Acharei Kedoshim or Bahar Bechukotai, and then we would get back into sync in a week or two? The answer is that it's not they outside of Israel who have to combine something in order to get back into sync. It is we in Israel that have to split and otherwise double sedra. Or to put it differently, last Shabbat, when we were finished with Pesach and outside of Israel wasn't, did they, outside of Israel, fall a week behind us, or did we jump a week ahead of them? The answer is we jumped a week ahead of them, because the system of Torah reading, the cycle of Torah reading that completes it in 1 year, and when sedras are doubled up and when they're read separately, in order for it to work out in all combinations of years, was created for Chutz La'aretz, outside of Israel. At the time, Israel had a different cycle of Torah reading, where the Torah was completed in a period of 3 years, and then we in Israel, way before my time, adopted the system of the 1 year reading, and we needed to make adjustments because of the fact that we don't have an eighth day of Pesach or a second day of Shavuot, and that's done by our splitting an otherwise scheduled double sedra. The first available double sedra for us to split is Matot Masi. Kedoshim, as I mentioned earlier, is a short sedra, 64 psukim. There are only about a half a dozen sedras that are larger. And, I'm sorry, that are smaller. There are many, many that are larger. And it is packed with mitzvot. 51 mitzvot is not the highest number of mitzvot in a sedra. There's Ki Teitzei with 74, Emor with 63, Re'ei with 55, Mishpatim with 53, and Kedoshim number 5, with 51, but taking into account its smallness, it turns out to be the most mitzvah-dense of all sedras. That's a term that I coined, but you could understand what it means. More mitzvot per pasuk than any other sedra. And very appropriately so, because when the sedra begins with the command of Kedoshim Tihiyu, you shall be holy, the question is, what does that mean? Does it mean put on a loincloth and go to a mountaintop and subsist on wild berries and water from a spring and meditate? That's not what it means for us. What it means for us is to do mitzvot. The answer comes from the fact that Kedoshim contains so many mitzvot packed in. Do mitzvot, and not just by going through the motions, but do mitzvot with enthusiasm, with the right attitude, with the right commitment, and that's how we become holy. You look into the list of mitzvot, and there are so many different topics that are touched upon which help a person be the Torah person he's supposed to be, including reverence for parents, keeping the Shabbat, reverence for the place of the Mikdash, or for the Beit HaMikdash itself, and many, many, many other mitzvot. I certainly don't have time to do justice to this parsha in what's left. I want to point out a concept. There are mitzvot that come in pairs. A mitzvah to do something and a prohibition against doing something else. Sometimes they seem to be perfectly overlapped. For example, in this week's Sedra of Kedoshim, we have the mitzvah of Peah. Leave the corner of your field uncut so that poor people could come and take. And the prohibition against cutting the entire field. Same difference, says the same thing. We're not allowed to cut the corner, you have to leave the corner. You're not allowed to take the gleanings from your vineyard, you have to leave the gleanings alone. And many other examples. Fast on Yom Kippur, don't eat and drink on Yom Kippur. Says the same thing, but it doesn't really. Because when you have a prohibition that you have to follow, a prohibition is usually associated, motivated by fear. Yirah. Fear of God, fear of heaven, fear of sin, And a positive mitzvah is motivated by ahavat Hashem, love of God, love of Torah, and love of mitzvot. So you're not allowed to cut the corner of your field, but you have to leave the corner of your field because you become a partner with God in taking care of poor people. That's a different motivation. There's also the idea from a Mishnah of Rabbi Hananiah ben Akashia says, Ratzah HaKadosh Baruch Hu lezakot Yisrael, God wanted to merit to the Jewish people, lefichach hirba lahem Torah mitzvot. He heaped upon us mitzvot. Some are duplicates, some are triplicates, some are saying the same thing in positive and negative. A person who violates is liable to a higher level of punishment, but a person who keeps these mitzvot has greater reward. We have no more time to say more than Shabbat Shalom, and that Rosh Chodesh Iyar is Saturday night, Sunday, and Monday. We bench Rosh Chodesh this Shabbat. The Haftorah is Mochar Chodesh. So I wish you a Shabbat Shalom, Chodesh Tov, L'Hishtameah.